Hello and welcome to the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. I'm joined by Ryan Wood. Tom Silverstein is on assignment, so we replaced him with one Hall of Famer to the next, Pete Doherty.
I don't think I'm in any Hall of Fame, so you better slow down there, Tom.
I'll tell you what Pete is. He is the best pinch hitter in the business.
He really is.
Like, what kind of luxury of riches do we have here at Packers?
Okay, enough of this foolishness.
That we can replace Tom Silverstein for one week only. With a Pete Doherty. We're now, if I just get you to shake my hand, Pete, we'd be doing good.
Not happening.
This is how we do. We win you over. So if we have to do this again, you'll say yes.
Here's
so.
Your flowers.
There you go. You deserve them, Pete. You deserve all the flowers.
He does.
The flowers, chocolates.
He's hating every second of this already.
I know.
I'll expect at least a good meal out of this.
There you go. Well, I'll get you a beer next time. Guinness. There you go.
There you go. We can get a good meal in Cleveland. Because that is a great segue.
I don't think people are, it's an okay segue. I don't think people are tuning in to listen to this baloney. Let's talk football.
Let's do that. But yes, so we'll get dinner in Cleveland because that is where the Green Bay Packers will be taking on the Browns Sunday at noon. And just two totally different teams. One is 2-0, one is 0-2. One team has two good wins, another team has two bad losses. And we can just start with talking Packers, Ryan. Just from being in the locker room, talking to players, hearing from Matt LaFleur, I don't know, can you get a sense of what the vibe is from the group? Not so much facing Cleveland, but just how they're feeling about how they played so far?
Well, it's just such a different week than the first two. I mean, first question I think I asked Matt LaFleur week one was about playing the Lions specifically and what that represents as an opener. It's just one game. It's just the first game, but it's the Lions, two-time reigning NFC North champ. You don't have to sell that. You don't have to sell the Washington Commanders. They were in the NFC Championship game last year. That's where you're trying to get. You got to sell the Cleveland Browns a little bit. You know, that's what this week is, and they're pros, so you expect them to go out there and do it, but that's what makes this week different. This is the first road game. They're going to Cleveland. It is not the hype of the last two, but you expect to, it's no less important than the last two. You expect to win them all the same, and that's what being a pro is. You have to go out there and take care of business, and this is an opportunity. I think this should be a 3-touchdown game. I don't think it should be close. It should be an absolute blowout. We'll see if it is.
Well said. Pete, just from when you've watched the Packers, you know, what have been your impressions through these first two games?
Yeah, I just, you know, I think the Browns, this is a really bad matchup for the Browns because they've got an immobile quarterback, and they're going to be going against what 2 weeks in, really early, but what's looking like it's probably one of the best handful of pass rushes in the league. And, you know, you just think about all the pressure they put on those first two games and how quick the ball's going to have to come out so fast. The corners are going to be able to jump routes. There's going to be a lot of sacks and hits probably. This has the makings for a really long, tough day for Joe Flacco. Now, we've all covered enough games to know weird stuff happens. Struggling are bad teams, beat good teams. I mean, I remember 1 year Kansas City hadn't won a game, and we were like 10 or 11 games into the season, and they beat the Packers. I think back in 97, Indianapolis had 0 or 1 wins. And they beat the Packers late in the year. Lindy Infante was the coach. So, these things can happen. But, man, that's a bad matchup with an immobile quarterback against that pass rush.
I was going to ask you what the most improbable Packers loss that you can remember is.
That was probably it. Because that Colts team, Infante got fired after that season. I think it was probably – he got fired quick, so it was probably after his second season. And they either had 0 or 1 wins going into that game. And it was like, 10th, 11th, 12th game of the season. Packers were coming off a Super Bowl win. During a season, they were going to the Super Bowl, and the Packers went there and got beat. And I got to go back and look. I don't think Harbaugh was their quarterback. When was he their quarterback?
What year?
97.
No. Might have been.
I don't think he was.
98 is when Peyton Manning took over.
Okay. But, they were really bad. And all I remember, the thing I remember most is, I remember one, how pissed Mike Holmgren was after that game. And he had a temper. And I just remember the Colts got the ball. It was a tie game or they were down one. And they got into scoring position. And Infante basically took 3 knees and they kicked the field goal as either his time ran out or there was just a couple seconds left. And it was stunning that basically the worst team in the league beat one of either the best or second best team in the league.
I think improbable losses that I've covered for the Packers, my mind goes to December 2nd, 2018. And this is not on the same level that you're saying, but that's the day Mike McCarthy got fired. They lost the home game against the Arizona Cardinals, which I think, don't hold me to this, but I think finished the year 3-13 and might have had the number one pick the following year. And it was just like this sense of, oh my goodness, the wheels have completely fallen off. And we talked about it in the press box right after the game. Like, he's done. Like, we knew there was no coming back from that. We did not know it would be that same night. But, like, those things can happen.
I remember going into that game thinking, okay, you know, McCarthy's job's in jeopardy, but, you know, they will never fire him during the season. And that game, getting back up in the press box and thinking, I got to write a column saying all bets are off. And then I remember just finishing that column, or just about to finish, and the national reports coming in that McCarthy had been fired. And it was like, well, I guess we're starting over.
We had to restart. Wow. I remember that.
But, yes, wow. that was a really bleak day in more recent Packers history. That was a really bad, just lethargic, blah, worse than blah performance.
So those things can happen.
They can.
That's the job of the Packers this week. Don't let that happen.
Right. It's like you say all that. But even still, though, like, this is one of those games – I don't even know how, like, badly the Packers would have to play to lose this game. It's one thing to say, like, oh, they didn't play great, or, you know, you kind of played nah. But, like, even then, you could still probably win the game, especially because of what your defense does. Because, you know, the offense might have a few, you know, might take them a minute or two, maybe a series to get things going, just because it is a very good Browns defensive line. But, yeah, I just feel like you'd have to be horrible.
Multiple turnovers, right?
Yeah.
Would almost be a must.
Yeah.
You know, with other Packers teams that were good, you could see it because the defense, you know, maybe they just have a bad defensive game. But there's just probably a little too much talent, you know. Mm-hmm. I watch their speed. And with Parsons' time speed, I can't remember what Nixon ran, but Parsons' time speed might be the fastest guy on their defense.
Yeah.
And plus they got two off-ball linebackers who run in the really low 4.5s. Mm-hmm. So they just have so much, they're just so much more dynamic than they were. They were going to be kind of dynamic anyway. And then you had Parsons and everything just gets knocked up a huge notch.
Yeah. To Pete's earlier point, we've talked a lot this week. We'll talk about it in this podcast about Myles Garrett. Almost because that's like the only thing to really talk about with the Cleveland Browns is Myles Garrett. But how in the world do they keep Joe Flacco upright? I just don't see that at all. He is a statue at age 40, and the Packers are just going to tee off on
this. Yeah, he may not last the game. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. I think, but that's the thing. It sets up for just the horrible ingredient for the Browns taking on this Packers defense, because either you're going to have to deal with Joe Flacco, who, again, he can't move, or you're going to throw in a rookie, Dylan Gabriel, or Shedeur Sanders. And putting rookies into a defense like this, it's just a recipe for horrible success. But
I mean, look what they did to Jaden Daniels and Jared Goff the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Those are two really good quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I was so interested to watch the Bears game, the Bears-Lions game on, like, you know, last Sunday. Because I was like, you know, new coordinator, you know, a lot of changes on the coaching staff, mm-hmm. all that. Okay, you know, maybe it'll be a rough start, a little rougher start than you'd expect for Detroit. Nope. But then they come out and just blow the Bears off the field. And it's like, man, you know, maybe it's they just ran into a good defense. And Jaden Daniels is a super talented guy. Mm-hmm. And the Packers made him look kind of ordinary for, you know, till the fourth quarter when it was kind of garbage time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of talent on that side of the ball. I can't remember the last time, you know, going into a – like even in 96 they had a really good defense, but their offense was – just as good and probably a little better, you know, Favre quarterback and all.
Yeah.
I mean, this could end up being a defensive team.
Yeah. I think the one thing about this game, or going back to just thinking about this defense, a play that I remember in that Commanders game that was just so impressive. And I think I even just sat back in my chair and said, wow, Parsons, he beats the double team. He almost chases down Daniels. Daniels is trying to roll, and Javon Buller was right there and just lays a hit on him. I'm like, those type of plays where this defense is so fast and so physical, and it's far from a finished product. So especially as things kind of roll on and continually going, Michael Parsons, if his snap count increases, it'll be very fascinating to see what this defense becomes in the long run.
You know where I think this game will be interesting is, it sounds like that rookie running back is a pretty talented guy. Judkins, and they're going to play him a lot this week. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing with Detroit was I thought for sure Detroit was going to come out and just try to, down after down, ram the ball right down the Packers' throat. And they really didn't do it. They ran a decent amount, but their game plan was not to just, you know, shove it down their throat. And if I'm Cleveland, that's all I'm doing. Because, you know, without Kenny Clark and all that, I really, really would want to test that defensive front. Not for one series, not for a quarter, but for as long as you're within touch of the game, run the ball. So, you know, maybe we'll find that there is a weakness there.
As long as you're in the game is, I think.
Right, you should get down by two scores and then you got
problems. It's easy to say when it's 0-0, but I think a big reason why the Lions never really were able to do this, and the Commanders the same. The Lions were down 27-6. Jordan Love gets the ball after losing the opening coin toss. The offense on the field first. They drive down 7-0. And they were playing behind the whole time. 27-10, the Commanders were down. That I don't see it. This is a team that jumped out of big early leads against two really quality opponents. I don't see how that the same recipe doesn't repeat itself against the Browns, and then the running game's out the window because you got to throw to catch up. And it plays into this defense's hands. And there have been so many plays over the first 2 weeks, like the one that you described, where you sit there and you wonder, what is the quarterback supposed to do here? I mean, Micah Parsons is in the backfield about the same time Jaden Daniels gets the shotgun snap. The only option is to run, but there's a lot of other guys on this defense that can run and flock to the football too. There is no good option. That's what this defense does. It puts a quarterback routinely in a bad position. What else is this guy supposed to do?
Yeah. The only thing that I am curious about this game, I guess it's more the injuries, in particular with the offensive line. And I'll start with you, Pete. You had a good source on the status of Aaron Banks and if he's playing or not.
Yes, it was Aaron Banks.
Impeccable source.
He basically said he's playing. You know, the one thing, what I'm wondering, is it a given that Belton will be the right tackle if Tom doesn't go? If Banks is playing, you've got Jordan Morgan, too. Would they play him over there? Or would they just alternate him at guard still with Sean Ryan and go with Belton at right tackle? Part of me thinks, well, why wouldn't they go with Morgan since that's their more experienced guy? But he hasn't played much right tackle, so right. I don't know. Is it a given that it's Belton? I don't know.
Can I ask this? Why? Because I was wondering the same thing. Why wouldn't they have done that against the Commanders? Is it just a short week?
Well, because Morgan was playing. He was already playing.
Yeah, Banks was out.
Yeah. The guy that I'm more surprised didn't start was Darian Kennard, given he played the final 15 snaps against the Lions, and I thought looked pretty good. I mean, he had some good blocks against Aiden Hutchinson, and I fully expected him on a short week. He traded a 6th-round pick to Philadelphia Eagles for a reason, to get this veteran depth. And then
I guess it's they alternated, right?
They did early in the game.
So I wonder, so maybe they'll just alternate those guys again and alternate the guards with Morgan not being a starter now. But I'm not sure why they wouldn't just put, you talk about wanting your best five out there. I'm not sure why you wouldn't just put Morgan over there, except that he hasn't worked there a lot. Maybe with the way they want to do their practice reps. So I'll be curious to see what the ultimate decision there is, because I can't imagine. I don't think that's something they'll share with us. They'll just spring it on the Browns on game day.
I was equally surprised to see Belton over Kennard. And if you don't want to put Jordan Morgan to right tackle, which he didn't. Did he take a rep at right tackle?
I don't think so. I was thinking about that today, and I was like, man, I don't remember it. He took left a lot of left tackle reps and some guard reps.
He did right guard with Sean Ryan.
Yeah.
He split a lot of right guard with Sean Ryan.
That's like the one position we haven't seen him really play is right tackle. So if you don't want to think of weeks enough to add that to his repertoire, they seem to really like Anthony Belton. They seem to think
he's a good run blocker.
He's huge. He's athletic.
He knocks people over, but he's really raw as a pass protector.
But I thought it'd be Darian Kennard. If it was me, not so sure I still wouldn't have Darian Kennard be the starting right tackle this week.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, yeah, to see how that plays out. But speaking of that, though, Zach Tom, I would say you were over there when he talked to reporters, you know, and he didn't say a whole lot. What did he say?
Yeah, Zach Tom often keeps his words to himself. He was asked after the padded practice Wednesday about how he felt for Sunday, and he pauses, he takes in the question. It's like, ask me again tomorrow. Like, it's very clear that oblique, yeah, he's feeling it. He said it's.
You ever had an oblique injury?
Me? No,
I had one, and yeah. Got a golfing, and I thought it was a bad. I took a swing, and I was like, oh, and I thought it hurt my back, and I went home that night, and you know, couldn't sleep and could hardly move, and I thought it was a back injury. I went to the doctor the next day, and he said, oh, it's an oblique injury, and it was brutal. I mean, it was. For a couple days, it was like having a really debilitating back injury. Mm. Now, I don't know how bad Tom's was, but that took a few weeks. Oblique injuries, like, God, baseball players get them, and they're out for months.
It's a good thing he's not a pitcher, because for pitchers, oblique injuries are season killers. Yeah. I mean, you're out a few months.
Yeah. It was fascinating to hear, though, because he said moving side to side, it's fine. But as far as running or trying to open up.
Which you could see in practice Wednesday that – when he had to go downfield, downhill, he was gimpy. Yeah. Now he was practicing Thursday. They weren't in pads today, so that was a good sign that he responded well to the padded practice, getting back on the field. That sort of lends me to believe that he has a legitimate shot for Sunday. The fact that he could double it up and go Thursday as well. Friday's going to be the real tell.
Yeah.
If he's on the field Friday, I would expect him to play. If he's not going to play Friday. Or if he's not going to play Saturday, I don't know.
Or Sunday, whatever day they play.
Yeah. If he's not going to play in Cleveland, we're going to Cleveland, right?
That's right. Are we?
Man, having a week too short week just throws my whole equilibrium off. I don't know what day it is.
Yeah.
But if he's not going to play Sunday, then I would not expect to see him Friday.
Yeah, so the other injury note is Jaden Reed. Having surgery, and it was fascinating because, you know, he had the collarbone surgery, and he added in social media, he's like, oh, also had foot surgery, because he talked about the Jones fracture he had in his left foot. So it makes sense, two birds with one stone, get them both cleaned up, because you're going to be out regardless. But as far as the wide receiver room, you know, what do you think is next for that group? Granted, he's already been hurt, but, you know, what do you make of just that group kind of moving forward?
I'm curious what you guys think, but I just feel like this is kind of a blessing in disguise for this team. You never want to see injuries. But he was going to be playing on that Jones fracture every week. The best way to heal a Jones fracture is staying off your feet. He was never going to get that opportunity. He was not going to have surgery. It was going to be a season-long issue for him. Now, you have the foot surgery, too, to fix the Jones fracture. He's going to be off his feet. He fixed his clavicle. He's going to be out some time. But how many games from now to whenever he returns late in the season, how many games are realistically going to be swung by not having Jaden Reed? Maybe Philadelphia Eagles. That could be a big one. Maybe at Detroit. That could be a big one. But the chance to have Jaden Reed and Christian Watson both fresh, healthy for the late season push, that is when this offense is at its best. And that is when they need this offense to be at its best, because this is a team squarely thinking Super Bowl. So that's a pretty good silver lining, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, a year ago at this time, I thought it's a given, you know, Jaden, like next year, next summer, they'll sign Jaden Reed to a contract extension.
Yeah.
Man, he's been hurt so much, and drafting Golden and Williams, it's not a given anymore. You know, until they drafted Golden, I thought he was their, you know, best receiver, but, you know, and Golden, I just, their most talented guy now. But I don't know that you can invest a ton of money in Reed with the injuries he's had for a couple of years now. They don't have to make the decision now.
Right.
But, I mean, it was a given a year ago at this time, and now it's not close to a given that he'll get a second contract with these guys.
Matthew Golden's the other silver lining to this.
Yeah, he'll get more reps.
A lot more targets now to really get his development on the fast track. So, okay, he's going to be expedited, and then you're going to have Jaden Reed fresh and rested, healthy.
They may end up needing all this depth of, you know, what if Wicks aggravates his
calf?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a clamoring for, you know, when they have depth at a position, hey, you know, you got to trade one of these guys. You can't play them all and get a pick. And I remember back in 2010, they had, you know, they were playing a 3-4, so they only had two inside linebackers on the field at any given time. And they had four good linebackers, and everybody wanted to trade one of them. And they ended up losing two of them to season-ending injuries. They needed every ounce of depth that they had there to win that Super Bowl. That ended up being key for them. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they could end up. If somebody wanted to trade, if Watson looks okay and somebody wanted to give you a pick for Dobbs, I'd at least think about it. But even with the way the health is shaping up, you know, we'll have to see how things look in October. But, you know, I'd lean against it because you lose a couple of guys and all of a sudden then you're wishing you had him. And you have a good team right now, so why mess with it?
That's it for me. Yeah. You this is a season, I think, where you want everyone on deck. I mean, you are loading up. You are geared up to make a Super Bowl.
So I got asked this question in a chat I did this week. What would you need to trade Malik Willis?
Day two.
At least a second round or third round or something like that. No, at least a third round maybe. At least.
Yeah. And I'm not saying he's worth a day two. I'm saying that's right. What I would need to trade him because this is a Super Bowl or bust season. You saw last year that in 2.5 games he gave you 3 wins.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen with Jordan Love. I mean, we should talk about that. Jordan Love looks awfully different than last year, awfully healthier, and has made a big difference. But, you know, there's 15 games left. You don't know what's going to happen. And if you need a guy to come in and spell your starter for a week, they feel a lot of confidence in Malik Willis.
That was basically because the premise of the question was, I think it was if they're offered a one. And I said, well, a one, you can't.
You get your 2026 back.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And so then I kept going from there. I said, now, if they offered a two, that'd be pretty tough to turn down two. Mm-hmm. I said, three, I'm really on the fence on a three. Mm-hmm. Push to shove, I might take it, but I'm kind of inclined not to. Four later is a flat no.
Yeah.
So I don't, that's just basically the same answer.
I completely agree.
Yeah. But you said it best, though. You need depth. You need as much depth as you can at all positions.
Willis saved him last year.
He saved him last year.
He won 3 games.
And they have depth. But think about the depth on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. But even think about just a prime example, the offensive line through these first two games. If you didn't draft Belton, if you didn't trade for Kennard, you know, where would you be? There are two players that have already played a lot of snaps through these first two games. If you didn't go through trades to get those guys, you know, who knows what we'd be talking about. Last year with Malik Willis, bringing him in just a week and a half or so before actually having to play for the Packers. So you need that depth. And like I said, you're seeing it with wide receiver right now. But it gives Matthew Golden a chance to see what he can do. It gives Savion Williams a chance to try to get more comfortable because Matt LaFleur made an interesting comment with those guys. Like, you don't rush it. You can let it happen organically. Because they feel good about, you know, Dobbs, Tucker Kraft.
Yeah, that jumped out to me when he's and Love basically gave the same answer before the opener. Because I was thinking they're going to need to force feed this guy Golden talking about, and they don't seem, you know, he's got the second most snaps among their receivers, but it's only 52%.
Right.
I thought they'd force feed him a little more than they seem inclined to. I still think he's going to be their best receiver by the end of the year, but. Yeah, who knows?
It's the luxury of the riches of depth that we have here with Pete subbing in for.
I mean,
for
look
Tom
at
Sommerstein.
Oh God, not this again!
But, look at that! Come on!
But the Packers have that too, where they don't have to force feed anything. If they did not have depth, I would not be looking at the Jaden Reed situation as a blessing in disguise.
Yeah,
there's just no way. But they do, so. You know, and it's not because Jaden Reed's not a phenomenally talented, productive, important player. He is, but he wasn't going to be healthy. And now he has a chance to at the most important time of the year. And they have the depth to look at that situation and be like, that'd be all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So as we kind of look into this game just a little bit as far as with the Packers, like offensively, yes, we talked about Myles Garrett. You know, Denzel Ward. He's been battling cramps, but I guess cramps, who knows? It might be he said it's a hydration thing, but maybe it's just because.
That sounds weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be like the Micah Parsons back in Dallas, who knows?
Can I make a point on the whole Myles Garrett, Zach Tom thing? Here's why I think it's important Zach Tom does play this week. You don't need him to win. You don't need him for a blowout win. That's not it. But you need him to take as many hits off your quarterback as you can. It's week three, the longevity of a season. You don't want Jordan Love taking shots. And Zach Tom helps with that. That's why I think even though it doesn't really affect the bottom line, it is a significant piece of this week because you just don't want him taking hits.
You know, the long season thing, though, makes me look at it the other way mm-hmm. with as far as Tom goes.
Yeah.
And especially against the Browns, you know, you got to keep a receiver out, you know, or in instead of sending him out or, you know, chipping the back or chipping the tight end against the Browns, fine, you know. To help a guy who's, you know, to help whoever's playing over there if it's not Tom. So I'd be inclined to not want Tom to go out there and aggravate it and then maybe have him miss a couple more weeks. So, in the end, it just depends on how he's feeling. Like, he could be – if he's feeling really good, then, yeah, you play him. But if it's still shaky at all, then I sit him for another week.
Well, does having a week five bye persuade your thinking on that at all? Because let's – it's going to be pass-fail.
So gut it out for 2 weeks, and then you got a week off.
It's going to be pass-fail. If he can't go, nothing else matters. He can't go. It's very simple.
How often is it that, you know, there's probably a lot of times where right. it's a real gray area, you know? Yeah.
So being if it's a gray area, does having a week five bye, and then that chance you gut it out these 2 weeks, and then you have a full week to rest it up, feel good.
If it were week four, for sure, I'd err on the side of playing him. Mm. Week five, you know, because you could end up having to sit him for the Cowboys game then. I don't know. I would err on the side of being conservative with him if I were the Packers.
Unfortunately for the Packers, they don't play Myles Garrett week four. Right. It's a now problem because that's and again, it's not about winning or losing. It's just about protecting your franchise. Against Myles Garrett.
Yeah. I think that was the biggest thing I'm wondering is how they'll attack that game plan. It's like wherever Myles Garrett is, are they going to send Tucker Kraft to make sure he's there? Is Josh Jacobs or Chris Brooks going to be there?
You got to slide their protection there every pass play unless it's just a quick throw.
Lots of chips.
Well, I guess you guys saw it. Well, do you think it could be similar to 2023 in Dallas when they had the game plan for Michael Parsons in the playoffs?
You know, the funny thing is I don't even remember noticing Parsons in that game.
Yeah.
He drew two holding penalties.
Did he? I just don't Here's, remember. Like, did you know that off the top of your head, or did you go back and look at that when you were doing research on him?
I did go back and look at that.
Yeah. I don't remember him at all.
Here's what I do remember this vividly. I remember seeing Aaron Jones have the pass pro game of his life in that playoff game. And he was the reason. And Matt LaFleur, on the introductory press conference, introducing Micah Parsons, he made reference to that. There were so many times Micah Parsons was close to wrecking that playoff game, but he said, our running back, that's Aaron Jones, our running back just got in the way. Like, Aaron Jones was the reason you did not notice Micah Parsons. He had a phenomenal pass blocking game.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was just wondering how they might try to attack that game plan, but even then, even without Zach Tom, like, I don't know. You just have a Browns team, like, they could have beat the Bengals. They lost by a point. They missed two field goals. They had a blocked punt. Like, the special teams are a nightmare.
It is. It is. You know, like, I've talked with there's an assistant coach in the league who I've talked a lot over the years, and the one thing he always says is, you know, never underestimate the pride of these guys. And, you know, you got these bad teams. These are really prideful people. And they can still play good football.
Yeah. Pros.
So he goes, you know, you just don't ever underestimate that. So, you know, they could dig down deep and have a good game.
What does that tell you if it's competitive in Cleveland? Does your mindset, because I think we're all very bullish on this team right now.
Yeah, hard
does not your, to be. Does right. your mindset change in any way if it's a one possession game comes down to the fourth quarter?
Probably not, you know. Weird things happen in this league. You know, human performance varies week to week. And I think in 97, after they won the Super Bowl that year, They lost really early in the year, like 6-3 or some ridiculous score at Philadelphia. It was like the second game of the season. So probably it probably won't change mine. It'd make you wonder a little bit. But in the end, you know, it's got 17 games. That's just a lot of games. And, you know, you don't want to overreact to anything. You don't want to be a prisoner of what happened most recently.
I ask just because if that were to happen, that would just cut so contrary to what all of our expectations are going into this game. I mean, they just beat the Lions and the Commanders by a combined score of 54-31. And the Lions and Commanders' other two games against bad teams, the Giants, the Bears, by the way, the Browns, a bad team, they won those two games 73-27. They just would be so contrary to what we are all expecting. It would be weird.
Put it this way. What was the spread's 8.5?
Yeah.
That seems light.
Over.
That seems really light to me. I'm thinking that should be a double-digit spread.
Yeah, I would definitely take the over. Because, yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting. I'm wondering how the start. As soon as the game starts, see how that first series goes, like, offensively and defensively, I'll probably look at you. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, don't worry about this game or whatever the case may be. But, you just don't come out flat. I think that's the biggest
thing. And it'll depend what the score. Like, if the final score is, you know, 14-10, then you'll be like, man, what's going on with this offense?
Maybe Jaden Reed's not – being out is not a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, or, you know, maybe you'll wonder what's – you know, what the deal is.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe it'll be a shootout.
No. But, yeah, offensively more than anything. That's, like, the group I'm watching. Not only because of injuries with, you know, Reed and the linemen. But, yeah, just how will they play? They haven't really been able to get the running game going yet. And, again, I would expect the Browns to go – you can say balls to the wall, load up the box once again and try to take away the run. And try to get pressure and see if maybe Denzel Ward or one of the guys on the back end can get a takeaway. But it's still going to be fascinating, especially though, I mean, it'll be, I don't know. I was even surprised to know that the Browns were a top-ranked defense.
I didn't know that until Matt LaFleur said it Wednesday. And then I went to check, and lo and behold, the Browns lead the league in fewest yards allowed through two games. They are the only other team, other than the Packers, to allow fewer than 100 total rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did just draft Mason Graham, number 5 overall, so they added a defensive tackle there, and that's the nice thing for Myles Garrett to have. It's something that Micah Parsons never really felt like he was playing with in Dallas.
Yeah.
So there's some places on this defense where, they're going to give the Packers off. Matt LaFleur said the Packers offense needs to have their best game against this Browns defense, which does not sound like something you would expect they need. But the Browns defense, they're salty.
I was surprised to see that because I'm like, well, how did they give up 41 points to the Ravens? But, again, it was the special teams and turnovers. Flacco had some fumbles. They had 2 blocked punts. So, you know, we talked a lot about the Packers special teams being a problem. They should also
– this should be the remedy.
This should be their moment, their kind of their come-to-Jesus moment with special teams. So, guys, I don't have anything else. Any final words, Pete, as you were our esteemed guest?
No, I'm just wondering where we're going to eat Saturday night. But besides that,
yeah, it'll be on him. He'll pay for it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Any final words?
Make the big bucks over here.
That's right.
If you've looked at the first two games and you've tried to find the holes, the only thing that really stands out is the special teams, right? The special teams penalties. And if I covered any other team for the past decade other than the Packers, I'd say, boy, how many teams in the league through two games would love to just have their biggest problem be special teams penalties? Like, what kind of blessed existence are you experiencing here when Joe Burrow is out for the season in Cincinnati, when quarterback's going down left and right, when the quarterback situation in Cleveland is 40-year-old Joe Flacco or rookies against Micah Parsons this past? Like, that's a really blessed existence. Mm-hmm. Except I have covered the Packers for the last decade, starting in 2014. We know how that ended, right? 2023, really promising team. Can't make a huge field goal late in the fourth quarter in the divisional round game. The 2 years before, 2021, very promising team. Block punt. They better get the special teams fixed. You know, we joke about the Browns special teams. This should be the remedy for the Packers special teams this week. It needs to be because they cannot afford to have another season linger with special teams being a problem, that just the guillotine over their heads of boy, this team's really good. They got all the makings. They can go to the Super Bowl, but the special teams, they've seen that movie too many times.
Yep. So that is going to be the really a big story, and a big storyline to follow along with is the special teams unit. So, guys, thank you once again. Pete, man, just thank you. Thank you. Like, your...
Great job, Pete.
Your analysis, your... just your storytelling. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I should explain the whole handshake thing. So, for 12 years now, I've... And this I'm not kidding about. It's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure in my career to work alongside Pete. And when you've been working with anyone, when you've been in a relationship with anyone for 12 years, you got to find things to keep it fresh, right? And I've been trying for 12 years to get Pete to give me a handshake, and he won't go there. He's got boundaries.
Well, I'm the same. I'm germs. There's germs everywhere. I get it. So I would say one of my highlights, it was last season. We were all eating before the game. I cracked the joke. Pete laughed pretty loudly. You're like, I haven't gotten this man to laugh in 12 years.
I remember that.
That was my accomplishment, getting a Hall of Famer to laugh.
I don't remember it. Why you call me a Hall of Famer? I'm in no Hall of Fame.
It's prophecy.
Give it 5 years after you retire.
I'm giving you a prophecy right now. It's going to come to fruition. Bank on it. And so I will get to introduce you during the speech right now because I called it, right?
Is Spoon in the Hall of Fame?
He will
in the,
he
in the,
should be.
In the writer's wing?
He will be.
I'm not sure if he
I'm not sure if he is or not.
Yeah.
So. Well, only one person gets in a year, so I don't know if he... I know Bob McGinn is in there. He used to work at the Press Gazette and JS.
Yeah. So, Hall of Famer in my book, as Tom Silver said.
No pressure, but just, you know, make sure to include me in your acceptance speech. Okay, we're done, guys. Thank you all so much for checking out the Green 19 podcast. Again, thank you, Pete Doherty, Ryan Wood. I'm Dominique Yates.